Here's what's popping on today's episode.
Because of our fear of appearing not perfect, we don't call people out for the small activities. So then if that's okay, then we push the boundary a little further because it's what we do as humans. We call it face threatening. So when our face is sort of our public self, we want to protect each other's face. We want to make each other look good. We could do better.
Welcome back, everyone, to Popping Perfectionism.
Hi!
We are so excited to have you here for another episode in season 4. Mm-hmm. And today is special because we will have a guest, which we are stoked about.
Our first time ever. We've never had a guest before. It's always just been you and me just chugging along. Yeah.
And it'll be fun to get someone else's perspective and insight into perfectionism and shed light into how it has infested other areas of the world that I haven't really been exposed to.
Yeah, and someone who is an expert in the topics that we're talking about, because, you know, we have our expertise in certain things, but there's, like Alicia said, a whole world of perfectionism in the workplace that we've never tapped into.
Yes.
So it'll be so valuable to hear from someone else.
Yes. And before we jump into that, I did want to touch on last episode a little bit, because there was a lot of things that we ended up talking about that were not in the plans at all.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of it was like male and female roles, stereotypical roles, the binary like expectations and how perfectionism can harm that. Mm-hmm. And that's not something I thought we'd really dig into in that episode, but it came out a lot in talking about like our dads and providers and things like that. So we kind of want to do a part two. Right? We talked about that. Yes. I was like, am I making this up?
Yes.
No, we want to do a part two of that episode because we had so many additional thoughts, and also our producer Ryan like shed some really good light on things that we could expound on for sure.
This episode of Popping Perfectionism is brought to you by Market Social. Run your event like a human being. Simple event marketing and management built on text messaging so you can reach your people. Check out their link in our show notes. And if you're enjoying this episode, pause the show now and give Popping Perfectionism a 5-star review.
Anna, do you have any life updates?
Let's think what's happened since Thanksgiving. I spent in Satan's vacation home, Rexburg, Idaho. It was the worst time of my life. Just kidding. It was good to be like with family. I just hated that it was in Rexburg. What else has happened? What do the people want to know? Dating. I'll call things off with a guy, which everyone should be proud that I walked away first. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because typically if a guy's breadcrumbing me, I eat those crumbs up, dude. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But this time around, I was getting breadcrumbed and I said, not for me. I'm not starving this time.
Yes.
You can keep your breadcrumbs.
And we actually had a good moment over this because I was talking to Anna through this like ending of the situationship.
As she does.
And there was a little bit of a moment where you're like, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. And I was like, wait, you handled it so differently than you have in the past.
Yeah.
Like, that is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time perfectionists want to, like, we demand perfection of ourselves, obviously, but we just expect ourselves when we make one mistake to do a complete 180 and, like, never do anything like that again. Mm-hmm. But it's just about making small steps of progress. Like, oh, I notice this behavior in myself. Like, I notice that I eat those breadcrumbs and leave nothing left. Yeah. But now I might just, like, nibble on a few and then be like, wait, I don't want to go down that path again, you know?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I was talking, my sister was also talking me through it at one point. And I just, being a perfectionist, right? There's two ends to it where you feel like you have to do everything perfectly all the time, right? And one mistake is like detrimental. But then also on the other end, like I remember asking her the question. I was like, okay, I'm going to end it. She was literally hyping me up on the phone while I was texting out the death sentence text to him.
Yeah.
And I remember asking her, I was like, am I killing something before it deserves to die? That's what I said to her, which was a very dramatic way to talk about ending a situationship. But she said something really valuable where she was like, Anna, he doesn't have to act perfectly horrible either to deserve an ending. Like, you don't have to act perfectly good to deserve, you know, happiness. And someone doesn't have to be perfectly bad to be cut out of your life. You know what I mean? Or even just like, you know, to have boundaries put around them. Like, someone doesn't have to be bad all the time. They can be a really good, awesome person and still not give you fully what you need. And that is deserving of, you know, a restructure of what your dynamic looks like with them.
Yes. And I think that's a common misconception with boundaries, that when you set a boundary or if you choose to, I hate saying like cut someone out of your life, but just prioritize your time elsewhere.
Yeah.
That it's burning a bridge forever. and it will never come back again. It can never be revived again. But I don't necessarily think that that's true, because someone could also just be not in the right time.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of like incompatibility, and you can still be friends and you can still be coworkers, or you could still see each other on the street and be fine, you
yeah,
know, and be
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, if I send this message, I can never speak to them again.
Mm-hmm.
I can never see him again. I can never. It's just like, whoa, we love that all or nothing thinking.
Yeah, because perfectionism loves the extremes, dude. Mm-hmm. It thrives in the extremes, which is the worst, because life is rarely extreme. Really? Life is always nuanced, and mm-hmm. it's never black and white.
Never. So,
anyway, those are kind of my, I mean, that's all that's really happened. I've been kickboxing, casual, a little bit of comedy here and there, which has been fun, and then work, and that's basically it. Mm-hmm. What about you? What's new with you?
Well, a lot is new with me because Tony broke his leg.
Yes.
I think, when was that?
It's like a week ago.
Yeah.
Maybe longer.
I don't know when people will listen to this, though. But it was like, from when recording this moment, it was like a week and a half prior. And it really sucked because the vet bill and the surgery bill cost more than he did. You know?
Oh, gosh.
And it was funny. I told myself, I was like, I will not spend over like $2,500 on a dog, which I know is a little bit absurd. Don't judge me. But I was like, that is my max for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the surgery bill was like almost double that.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like,
That is horrifying.
This is hard.
This is what we call a rough time, kids.
Really awesome. So that, you know, brought a lot of stress in my life, not only on like the financial side, but then the emotional side of having a dog with a broken leg who's a puppy and watching him heal and have to get surgery. And like, it's actually like having a baby. I feel like I've never had a baby, but he has to take his meds at a certain time. He's not allowed to play because his leg is healing, but he's a puppy. So it's just a lot.
Yeah.
And then Eli obviously being in Honduras, I think his trip is getting extended, by the way, for like another month.
That sucks.
So he might miss like Christmas and New Year's and my birthday, which sucks.
That does suck.
So honestly, I've been on the brink of a mental breakdown, but I'm holding it together. And that's just how life is sometimes. It's just like, you know what? It's hard, but we just keep going. So I'm here. We're doing good. We're pushing along.
Thriving.
Yep.
Thriving. As best as you can. Anytime I'm about to have a mental breakdown, okay, tip for the people, I blast Sicko Mode by Travis Scott.
Which is so
I
good.
Don't know why, but that song just calms me down. And it shouldn't, because nothing about that song is like calm.
Yeah.
So maybe try Sicko Mode.
I should try that.
It could be good.
One of my hype songs is If the Savior Stood Beside Me, which is like a church like primary song that I just like love. It's so funny. And then there's some Kanye songs, but there's explicit words in the title, so I don't want to like say it. Anyway.
We don't want to get canceled.
No.
We don't want to get shadow banned.
No, absolutely not. So with that being said, let's play If the Savior Stood Beside Me. Just kidding.
Hit it.
No. But yeah, we're just here. We're moving along. New Year's is one of my favorite times of the year. I love Christmas, but I also just love the symbolism of a new year, a new start, a new beginning.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite holidays ever. And I'm pretty sure I was supposed to be born on New Year's, but I was born January 5th.
Oh, so in your soul,
it's
your
my
New
birthday.
Year's baby. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, with that being said, quick reminder to all the perfectionists and people who are hard on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Be nice when you review your New Year's goals that you made this past January, and, you know, just pivot, reset, regroup.
Alicia is speaking from past trauma between she and I, because every year we make New Year's resolutions, mm-hmm. and we don't just make them at the beginning of the year. We like have quarterly check-ins with each other at least that often. And every time we do, we're like, oh, well, got to take that one off, or got to change that one, because, and then by the end of the year, we just have scraps of our resolutions where it's like, I did go to the gym at least twice this year. And so that's a great reminder that it's like the intention is just as important in its own way, right?
Yeah.
That you want to be better. That is enough.
Mm-hmm. Be kind, be gentle, just make the necessary changes and move forward. I think the New Year's goals, I might like phase out. I might be like the first two months, I'm only going to focus on this goal, and then I'm going to build.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
We
so
should
it's not
talk
like
about
all
this.
At once.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I have to make a call.
You.
Called you.
I'm like, one second.
Hi. You want to change things?
Absolutely.
Offline.
All right. Well, okay. With that being said, let's go ahead and get into this episode, and yes. We hope that you enjoy.
All right, guys. We have our guest here with us today. So this is Maria Blevins. She and I first met at good old UVU when I was in your class. Go Wolverines, yeah. Baby. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to have multiple classes from you as a student, and they were always some of my favorite. And I'm not just saying that because you're on our podcast right now, genuinely. So Maria is an expert in many, 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 many things, but I'm going to read you guys her like official bio so you can really get a good idea of how much this woman has done. So Maria Blevins, PhD, is an associate professor of communication at Utah Valley University. Her research focuses on conflict in organizational and environmental communication. Before becoming an academic, she was a whitewater rafting guide on the New, Gauley, and Snake Rivers. She also served as the river manager on the Madison River in Montana. She has a passion for helping people enjoy rivers and the outdoors, which we love. Her current research focuses on sexual harassment in the whitewater rafting industry. She's also one of the founding members of ADASH, which is an anti-discrimination organization for river professionals through the River Management Society. She received her Bachelor's of Science in Outdoor Recreation Management from the University of Maine and...
At Machias.
Machias.
It's a real word, yeah.
Machias. Okay. Anna and I were sitting there like, how do you pronounce this in her bio? We're like, what?
It's a big word. Machias.
Google was not helping me. Yes. I was like, Maria's our only source. So you got your bachelor's from there. Yep. And then she got her master's in communication and a certificate in alternative dispute resolution for natural resources from the University of Montana. And her PhD from the University of Utah.
That's right.
Right here in Utah.
Right here in Utah.
Yeah. Quite a ledger, quite a resume of things. And that doesn't even cover, I mean, you've been like, you know, you've published multiple papers, right? You've done tons of research, and you really are the definition of an expert in what you do. You really are.
I mean, I would say that in a very tiny amount of things, I can tell you a lot. But yeah.
Which we love. Yeah, which we love.
Expert. Yes.
Yeah.
I never had the blessing of having you as a professor, but I will say with all of this like academic things, all of this credibility, you are so fun still. Sometimes when I read all that stuff, I'm like, this person must be so boring. But you are so fun.
That means the world to me.
Thank you. I was like, all of the students just loved your classes, and they're like, oh yeah, Maria's the one that does this whitewater rafting thing. And anyway, you did step in once as like a substitute teacher for like, I think it was Paul Parkin's class or something like that. So you did grace me once with your presence, but well, here we are. Never would I think that we would be here doing a podcast. So
I believe you just wisely said time is long and infinite. And if you didn't get it on the first round,
it'll come back around. Later.
So,
yeah.
Yes. True. Good. We get to be here together.
Now. I know. I'm stoked.
The universe loves us.
Exactly.
It works together for us. Okay. So let's dive into what we're talking about today. We'd love, Maria, if you first just give us some background on what got you into research in the rafting community and how all of that came to be and where you're like coming from.
Yeah,
that.
Absolutely. So as you talked about in my bio, I was a whitewater rafting guide for many, many years. Mm-hmm. So there was many years where I did that as my primary job. And then I would be a ski bum in Park City in the winter. And then as I became a graduate student, I would raft guide in the summer to sort of make money. So through my master's program and my PhD program, I had a double life as nerd so slash cool. raft guide, which was a really nice balance. It helped me keep that fun side. And I'm studying organizational communication. I'm studying communication theory. I'm studying a lot of feminist communication, and I'm in this job as a raft guide. And in the winter of 2015, sort of this big news story broke open, and it was a group of employees at Grand Canyon National Park came forward to then Secretary of Interior Sally Jewell and reported sort of years and years, probably decades, of sexual harassment, sexism, and sexual assault from the River Ranger Squad at Grand Canyon National Park. And I was like, that's really interesting. I'd actually gone down the river with those folks. And I was like, those guys, they were so cool. And then I would think of like things that happened, and I was like, well, yeah, except for when they asked all the women on the trip to like run this rapid without tops on. I mean, we still had life jackets on.
Oh, but I was.
Yeah.
Oh, safety, but still.
No, but
safety first.
Still.
But like that was requested, or just like, you know, inappropriate things that were said. And then I put together that like that was at work. That was like their job. They worked for the federal government. And
right.
I sort of had this realization that I had been the word we use in organizational communication is socialized. And so socialization is the process of how you learn how things work around here. Mm-hmm. So I'd been socialized as a brand new guide on like how things work around here is that we're different here. We're a little wild. We're, you know, we don't adhere to the normal rules mm-hmm. of society. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was really interesting that I was like in classes learning about feminist organizational theory and being a RAF guide, and it hadn't struck me that this was wild behavior at work. And I'm like a little ashamed to say that looking back.
Yeah.
So it started a conversation in the rafting community. My friends and I would have conversations, and I just got really curious about like, how did this happen? How did this not even flag to me that this was like wild? And so I was less interested in if sexual harassment was happening. Of course, this is right before Me Too happened. And then while I was collecting data, Me Too happened. And so I don't think we ask, like, is sexual harassment happening anymore? I think we know it's in every single organization. Yeah. But what I got really curious about was, what are the strategies people use to persevere, to survive in these hyper-masculine environments where the expectation is like, you got to be tough enough or you're not going to survive. You're not going to hang here. So I started interviewing people. I interviewed about 60 RAF guides that worked all over the country that identified as male, female. I had one non-binary participant, people that worked on quick day trips that were just a few hours long, people that worked multi-day trips that lasted up to 2.5 weeks long.
Oh my gosh.
It's a long time. And it's really interesting, right? When you think about if you're being sexually harassed at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and it's a 2-week trip.
Yeah. Where do you go?
Who do you go to? Particularly if it's someone with more power than you, like your trip leader, or if it's a customer that you're like working to get a tip from, or, ooh, you know, that dynamic is sort of weird. Yeah. So there's some really fascinating parts to this question with this organization or with this career line. I also think raft guides are awesome storytellers. It's part of what's fun about them. I don't know if you've ever gone rafting, but they will weave a yarn. And so you get these incredible narratives from these interviews where people are just telling these wild stories. So that is the background of the story. And you might be thinking right now, well, what does this have to do with perfectionism? But perfectionism popped up in sort of two ways in my research that we're gonna get into as we talk a little further. But as a preview, one of the strategies that women in particular talk about is that they have to be perfect. And I have some quotes from participants outlining that. Then the other thing is, I am really intrigued at how bad actors, particularly those that aren't the worst, right? So we have like a full creeper who maybe is eligible, maybe not. I would like to have a more nuanced conversation around sexual harassment and behaviors, because I think because of our fear of appearing not perfect, we don't call people out for the small activities. So then if that's okay, then we push the boundary a little further because it's what we do as humans. And then that's okay. And because we don't want to, we call it face threatening. So when our face is sort of our public self, it's the version of ourselves that we present to the world. Mm-hmm. And we want to protect each other's face. We want to make each other look good. And so I think that we could do better if we were better at receiving feedback, better at giving feedback, and weren't so worried about not being perfect in that.
Do you think, sorry, this might be a premature question, but what you said I loved. Do you think we would be better at threatening other people's faces if we were better at our own faces being threatened? Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, I do.
We'd be less likely to save someone else's face if we were okay with our face sometimes.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's right. And so working through that. So we can get to it now. We can get into it later. Yeah. But those are the two ways where I think perfectionism really comes up. And of course, I think it's important to talk about these things all of the time. Mm-hmm. And I just want workplaces, like I said, I don't think that the river community is unique. I want all of our workplaces to feel safe and fun and better for everyone.
Yeah, so. Totally. And that, you know, just even that touches on other-oriented and self-oriented perfectionism, which we talk about all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And I will say too, like, having experienced sexual harassment or sexual assault in the workplace, mm-hmm. it's really hard when it's someone that is in a position of power over you, yeah, because you don't want to threaten their face. No. You want to protect them. You want to help them save face. But at the same time, you don't know what to do with this discomfort. You're worried about your face. What are the repercussions of standing up for yourself? What are the repercussions of face threatening, mm-hmm, all of these different things. So with river rafting, women probably often feel this need to maintain an image, mm-hmm, save their face. Like, what are they portraying? So on the river and in other organizations, how do you feel the need to appear perfect or flawless manifests and affects the culture,
yeah,
of the team?
Absolutely. Great question. I pulled a few quotes from my
participants. I love it.
Amazing.
Because I feel like they say it so beautifully. So
also, quick side note, when was this research conducted? Was it when you were at the U?
So no, this research is pretty recent. It's been I was inspired in 2015. I started collecting data in 2018. And and then I've had articles come out. And what's really interesting, unlike any other research I've done before, is like I had an article come out last year in Paddling Magazine, and people write me and are like, can I please tell you my story? Because wow, this is really cool, resonating. So I have collected data all the way up to last May, right? Because I am so honored that people want to tell me their story. So
that's amazing.
It's an ongoing process.
Okay.
And so, like I said, I was looking for the strategies people use to hang out. And I do want to clarify that I think often, especially right now in our culture, we talk about sexual harassment being, male to female, but I think as we get more and more comfortable, and this goes with perfectionism as well, I think we don't talk about men being sexually harassed, mm-hmm, but I think they're sexually harassed a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I think as we become cooler about talking about sexual harassment, we will be staggered at the number of men that come forward, mm-hmm, and are like, actually, yeah, I've had some really crummy behavior.
Yeah. Because we were talking before and we were saying girls can be creepy too.
Girls, mm-hmm, can be creepy too. Yeah.
Some girls are real creeps.
But I think men don't even want to talk about it right now, right? It's, mm-hmm, super face threatening. I think that goes at like my idea of masculinity. Yes. So hopefully we're going to be at a place where it's not just talking about male to female harassment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I asked people, what are the strategies you saw people utilize? And by far the number one strategy that came up over and over is women reporting that they had to be better. They had to be the best out there. They had to be better than the men. So Camry said, quote, so it forces you to have to be basically perfect. You know, like the guys, they could do stuff, like make a mistake or something, and it was just laughed about. But when a girl makes a mistake, it's like they aren't confident. So as a woman in a job like that, I think you just have to be perfect. You have to hold yourself to a higher standard than the guys, for sure. So,
wow. Mm-hmm. So literally perfectionism.
She's literally saying perfectionism. Yeah. Nancy said, I basically just felt the need to always be really good at what I did, to never be last, basically because I didn't want any assumption to be made on my ability to do the job because of my gender. It just sort of felt like there wasn't really any sort of fading into the crowd, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So Nancy felt like she was sort of performing for every woman, because there, what I didn't explain is, this is getting better in more modern days, but you know, when I was a RAF guide, there was a lot of companies I worked at where I was the only female guide on staff. When I started, it was like a 10-to-1 ratio. So for every 9 dudes, there was one woman.
Yeah.
I did ask this question in my research gathering, and there is no companies where it's more than 50-50. And there was only 2 companies that of people that I talked to that was 50-50.
Wow.
Majority
wow. Okay.
are male dominated.
Our main men.
Yeah.
I think I was going to say male and men, and I was like, Maine.
I was like, Maine? Wait, what's happening in Maine?
Yeah. I'll give you one more quote here. Raven said she felt incredible pressure to be exceptional at the job. And here's her quote. As a woman, you felt like you had to be not just good enough, you had to be the best or that much better. I felt like it wasn't enough to just run the rapids well and cook for them, the customers, their lunch, and learn all their names. You have to have this extra whatever it was. It felt elusive. It felt like you were never actually would be get it all right. I think that women stress, I can't speak for everyone, but it seems like the women stressed harder on trying to get all the parts right, and that you had to live up to your trip leader's expectation and the customer's expectations And sometimes my male counterparts, well, they were more comfortable at being a little more like, oh, well.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay.
So yeah. To break that down for our audience, too, who isn't as familiar right. with like our jargon. Communication language and the jargon and yeah. whatever we're speaking, why do they feel that way? Why do the women feel this way that they need to be the best? They can't slip up. They have to have that unspoken charisma, the it factor. Why?
Yeah. So I think in a situation where there's not a lot of women, I think you feel a little bit under the microscope, a little scrutinized. Mm. And I think it feels like a lot of pressure that you got to be proving that you can be there, that women can be there. I had one participant named Mary, who was one of the pioneers in the white water industry. And she was like, every day I went out there and felt like I had to be every single woman. And that if I screwed up, I was representing that. Every single woman would screw up.
That is a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure.
And then, I didn't pull any quotes on this, but your customers often showed up and they have this image of who their raft guide's going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's like this 6'2" dude with a big beard and a flannel shirt. And, you know, they've like got their brawny paper towels under one hand and they're like ready to go. And so, you know, you show up and you're a young woman and it's like, let's go. And like, they're maybe a little nervous and they feel like they're doing this really exciting thing. And then all of a sudden a girl can do it. Like, and so almost every person I talked to had a story about a group of customers that refused to go down the river with them because of being a female guide.
My gosh.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another thing is like the scrutiny from the customers coming in was almost more extreme than the scrutiny from your coworkers.
And I wonder if part of that too is like the nature of whitewater rafting where it's like adventure, it's dangerous, it's edgy. And then they see this girl. It's like, wait, you're supposed to like lead and protect and guide us.
I think that's totally right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah, it sounds like you were just talking about the idea of male as protector, what that means. And so, you know, you're really jumping into this different gender expectation. And So I feel like this idea of needing to be perfect is a lot of women felt like they weren't going to be able to stay in the job if they like to be considered good. You had to be the best. Whereas the men could sort of be like, oh, whatever. But they looked the part and everyone just felt like they were going to be fine.
I really like what you said where because it was like perfectionism personified where just barely where you said in order to be good, you had to be the best.
Yeah.
There was no, and you couldn't just be good if you wanted to be good. And that's how perfectionism works, right? With anyone where it's like you, if you want to be labeled as good in your own mind or in others, then you have to be number one.
Yeah.
And anything less is not good.
And often the gender research says, especially as women are breaking into a field that is, you know, historically male dominated, that is what has to happen, right? And so this checks into like how organizations work and like how are we inviting new people into them and thriving. In fact, just today I was talking to a colleague about this. A student was presenting a really awesome project on electricians. She had like 100 pieces of data. She had, you know, sent surveys to 100 people. One female participant out of the 100 that were training to be electricians. And,
wow.
And the other professor was like, yeah, this was just like becoming a professor 50 years ago. You know, like, so we have the careers where like, it doesn't feel weird to see a female professor anymore. I think it's the norm, but that was not the norm, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then there are still careers where that's happening. And then the reverse is true as well for female, like a man coming into a daycare center.
Nursing program. Right?
And I would be really interested to talk to men and find out those careers if they feel like they have to perform exceptionally well. And I would guess that that's true.
I would as well.
Again, this goes both ways. I think we often are just talk about, you know, how sexism impacts women, but it impacts everybody. And
totally.
We could all have a gentler time. Yeah.
And I think it also impacts like different parts of people's identities because it could also be true with race. Mm-hmm. It could also be true with nationality where it's like, okay, I'm the one black person. I have to represent all black people ever on the earth in this situation.
Yep.
And one thing about me, I love reality TV.
Yes.
And okay, do you watch like Big Brother or Survivor, any of those shows?
I want to.
Okay, we'll talk later.
I'm like, but I do dabble in Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
Okay, I love it.
Yeah.
So I love Survivor, especially, but I also like Big Brother. And I was watching this season where there was a deaf contestant and then someone part of the Sikh community mm-hmm. or like religion or whatever it is. I'm ignorant to what that means. But both of them felt an immense pressure to represent their right. community. And that's just so, so hard. Like, yeah. I wonder why we place that upon ourselves. And I also wonder if it's because we place that expectation on other people too.
Yeah.
Mm. Where it's yeah. like, regardless of political standing or what people think, like Kamala Harris being the first female in like the president's office for America, and so many like women mm-hmm. hate on her because they're like, oh, that she has to represent us. It's like, wait, whoa, she's just a person, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's so much of, I mean, we'll get to the definition of connectionism, uh-huh. but essentially it's just viewing human beings as that, mm-hmm. like all of our vulnerabilities and insecurities and weaknesses and flaws, that's what connects us. It's yeah. not a competition. It's right. not any of that. And the identity that we actually carry is a different version in everyone else's mind.
Yeah.
Like I am a different version of Alicia to you than I am to you.
Yeah.
And then I am to Ryan and to my friends. So it's like, why actually do I care so much about this image that I'm maintaining if it's different in every single person's world?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it also is significant that you said multiple times that these women used the verb or a synonym to perform. Mm-hmm. We had to perform the best. We had to perform perfectly.
Right.
We talked about in the last episode, there's a quote by Celeste Headlee who gave a TED Talk on how to be a good listener. I don't know if you've seen it. If not, that's okay.
I can't wait to.
It's great.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, I don't know if I've heard
this. And she says basically she talks through how we all, you know, give the cues that we're listening. Mm-hmm. We nod. We right? all know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she had this really funny but powerful point where she said, if you're actually being a good listener, you don't need to look like you're being a good listener. Huh. Which I do think cues do help other people feel comfortable mm-hmm. and listened to, and there's value in that. But I wish that the world was more like that, where it's like you don't have to perform like a good river mm-hmm. raft guide if you're being a good river raft mm-hmm. guide. But unfortunately for these women, that's kind of the precedent that is set on them.
Right.
Where just being a good raft guide mm-hmm. isn't enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But
that's very unfortunate.
With that, so we as we were thinking about this episode, we were thinking also about kind of what you just mentioned, how sexism on paper hurts women, right, or mm-hmm. whoever it's against, but then it also inversely hurts, you know, the
perpetrator,
the benefactor, or whatever mm-hmm. you would call it.
Yeah.
So how do you see perfectionism affecting the perpetrators?
Yeah.
In these situations.
So I've been thinking about this a lot. I am a person who's been living in this female body my whole life and lived in this and engaged in this community for years. Still mm-hmm. am a recreational rafter. And I am in the middle of doing this research and I still don't know how to react when someone does something inappropriate or crosses a line with me. This goes back to what I was talking about before in how do we communicate this is not okay? And I think it goes into this idea of, and I think you broke it down beautifully, Anna, that we worry about not looking perfect, and then we worry about other people not looking perfect, and we're worried about saving face for them. And so when someone does something, and it might not even be on purpose nefarious, but when someone does something, we don't know what to do. We don't know what to say. Like, yeah. I didn't love that joke. that did not feel funny to me. Or I don't like it when you touch me that way. A story that I found really powerful in my interviews was I interviewed a few folks from the same company. And they were like, we had this game that was called Good Game. And you would just go up to someone, slap them on the bottom and say, good game. And almost every participant I talked to from that company kind of was like, let me tell you something secret. Most of the time I didn't mind that game, but every once in a while I just hated that game. It just like, I didn't want that, but I didn't think I could say no because the day before I didn't like it. Or, you know, if mm-hmm. I did say stop, people would call me not cool or square.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I just thought about, even for myself, that when someone gives me the feedback of like, that joke didn't really hit as funny, Maria, it hit as like,
yeah, it didn't land.
Or, you know, I don't want you to hug me right now, or like whatever the thing is. I can feel really defensive about it. And so if we could get better about receiving feedback and, you know, there's all of the ideas around DWEC and growth mindset, which I think is such a great way to counteract to perfectionism. But I don't think we can grow as individuals if we don't get feedback. And yet we always sort of frame it as like, oh, someone didn't like what I did. And so I'm not perfect. And now
it's everything's personal.
It's personal. And so if it could just be like, didn't like that. And so I think a lot of that comes with building a structure beforehand in an organization or with a group of friends that's like, hey, maybe we have a word that's like, cut it out, you know, that means we're not doing this anymore. Or just like, you can know that I love you very much, but this just doesn't feel nice right now. And then the other thing that this does is in ADASH, I work with a woman named Ira Strand, and she's great. She calls them red balloons. And so that people that are predators, right? So there are people that just like accidentally say the wrong thing. And that is a bummer. And hopefully we learn and grow about it. But there are people that are testing, and they will cross further and further and further to see what is acceptable. So it might start with an inappropriate comment and then an inappropriate touch. And then, so she calls them red balloons. So she like, she will, the perpetrator will release a red balloon. So if you have a comment or you're able to come back and feel confident to say like, that is not okay. That joke is not okay. That's going to stop that person before they go further. Whereas if you just let it go because you're feeling timid, and I can think, like I said, I'm in the middle of doing this research. I think of an experience that happened in the last year. I was hanging out in one of my favorite places in the world, Lava Hot Springs. Shout out. With a really good friend of mine. We're having a great chat. And some dude rolls over and he's, you know, wanting to chat with us and whatever. And we're kind of given the hints of like, we're not interested. He keeps talking and we're both kind of always interested in what anyone is saying. But he all of a sudden is like, I just want you to have this experience that I'm having. I want you to hear my music. And he like puts his earbud in my ear before I can even. And I even said like, no, but like literally he's like putting this like thing that in my body. I hate it. But like, I don't know what to do. And so people that are sort of predators are counting on you to not have that thing at the ready to like push back. And we don't have that thing at the ready because we're used to people, we're expecting people to follow the protocols, to follow the rules that we sort of have engaged. It is not, it would be very strange if I put something in your ear right now. It would be very strange if I did that to one of my colleagues at work or a student. Like, it's an unacceptable behavior, but he's depending on, predators are depending, and I'm not necessarily calling this person a predator, but I am thinking that it is very inappropriate to put a earbud in a stranger's ear. So where I'm getting with this is if we can have a strategy and take away the like, I'm not worried about threatening this person's face. I'm not worried about this person's ego. I'm going to think about my safety. I'm going to think about what feels good to me. And, you know, have a few things in your pocket that are just like, I don't know about you, but I'm always like, I wish I would have said that 10 minutes after a conversation or 3 days after a conversation. I'm always so articulate in the shower 2 days after.
Or like, okay, when I get in this situation again, I'm going to say this. Exactly. Like, I'm going to handle it differently. I'm going to do this. And then it happens again and you're like, freeze.
So, you know, just a few. So like one of my favorites is I'll just look at people now and say, do you think it's appropriate for you to put that in my ear right now?
Nice.
Right? So that can be a thing you always use. And then, like, it's not necessarily face threatening. It turns it back on a question. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if it's something they say, you know, that's, like, a little off color, if it's a creepy comment, like, will you explain to me why that's funny? Will you explain to me why that's appropriate? Or will you explain to me why I should feel good about? Is that a compliment? Right. And then make them justify it. So those are sort of two that I've been keeping in my pocket because I think we don't have them ready to go. So I think we can't grow. And I also think, I hate to bring in this word, but we
bring it in.
We go, you know, can't cancel culture. I think it's because we don't create appropriate boundaries while we can. Right. So I don't necessarily think people need to be sent to social isolation. I think most people are quite lovely, but they just maybe have made a mistake or two. But I think we're scared to give feedback that's like, wrong answer. And so if we could do that earlier, if we could do it in a loving way, if we could do it, what is this magical new connectionism?
Connectionism,
right? If we could do this in a way that says, Anna, I care about you so much. I love working with you. And I didn't love that joke.
Yeah.
Right? How different would that feel?
Yep.
And then, or even just like playing good game is so fun often, but today it is just not working for me. Is mm-hmm. that all right? It changes. Mm-hmm. It changes everything. And it's not me saying that you're a terrible person that's going to joke jail. It's not me saying that like you're canceled forever. It's us being able to learn and grow together. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
And to like teach each other, because yeah. I think oftentimes a perpetrator, like you said, has maybe just learned different social norms and they haven't Absolutely. Been taught what's okay and what's not okay.
Yeah.
So that's why they keep testing and testing and testing. And having a puppy right now, it's a lot of teaching
yeah.
what's okay, what's mm-hmm. not okay. And they love to test and yeah. test and test and see like what you will hold and what you will not hold. So I think sometimes it's being willing to like teach someone.
Yeah. Just what an incredible way to think of it, right? Mm-hmm. That yeah. I'm just continually learning. I'm a curious mm-hmm. person who's going to fumble my way through and make some
yeah.
dang mistakes yep. every step of the way. And like, it doesn't mean that I'm terrible.
Mm-mm.
And I'm never going to be perfect.
Yeah. No.
And mm-hmm. and telling yourself that,
it yeah.
hurts. But like, it's
it hurts,
freeing.
But it's funny because it's we all have that in common.
Right.
It's like, oh, you'll never be perfect? Yeah. Me too. It's okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, none of us will.
And if we could free that up and then be like, so since we all know we're never going to be perfect, mm-hmm. let's tell jokes that are going to feel funny. Let's
yeah.
treat each other in a way that is going to like feel good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah. And with the whole cancel culture that you brought up, I think that is so interesting because you talked about how can't we just let people mess up sometimes yeah. and learn and grow, right?
Right.
Because there are people with ill intent that maybe deserve a little social mm-hmm. shaming, right?
It is a spectrum.
They definitely deserve the consequences, the repercussions yeah, right. of malicious what
yeah.
behavior.
That's yeah, right. of what they've done or said or whatever.
I am not advocating a consequent-free life. That's exactly right.
Where he's like, do whatever you want.
Yeah, we're crazy around here.
River rafting.
We're on a river right now, metaphorically.
Life is that's a right. river.
I think cancel culture is really interesting because it doesn't allow you to hold multiple versions of a person at once. Exactly. They're either the person that said the offensive joke or mm-hmm. they're not. And my dad actually sent me a voice memo today where a girl called him out on a mistake or something. He's a counselor at a high school uh-huh. and she was shadowing him
yeah.
and she like pointed out something he'd done wrong. He didn't specify. And he basically sent this voice memo. He's like, I'm going into a mental spiral. Please help mm-hmm. me. And I explained to him, I was like, the reason your brain is like freaking out right now is because it's not that she caught you in an awkward moment or an incompetent moment. Your brain is saying, oh no, she found us out. We are awkward. We are incompetent.
Imposter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's this whole, right, perfectionism is the belief that if you look perfect and act perfect, you'll prevent yourself from feeling dark feelings, right? Shame, mm-hmm. blame, shame, blame, pain, judgment, things of that nature. Cancel culture doesn't allow us to accept that there are multiple versions of someone. Mm-hmm. And I think it, again, is a mirror that reflects that we don't hold multiple versions of ourselves.
Right.
We either, like, we're an awkward person, we're yeah. an incompetent person, we're a dumb person, not that we are a human being with a dumb, awkward
mm-hmm. yeah.
moments.
Yep.
And yeah. I think going to that definition of perfectionism, that's why Brené Brown calls it a shield.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to essentially hide all of the human parts of you, the part of you that is still learning and will always be learning, the part that isn't perfect. So when a perpetrator receives feedback, mm-hmm. it's a shot at their shield and yeah. then they get defensive. And I have a shield too. And sometimes I take feedback personally because mm-hmm. I think it's a shot at my image when actually they're just, you know, helping me. They're giving me an opportunity to pivot and mm-hmm. to learn and to evolve as a human being. So I think that's maybe why perpetrators, that's how they try mm-hmm. to save that face. Mm-hmm. And that's why giving feedback might be threatening. And it's like, I think we all relate to that a little bit. Like yeah. when yeah. we're exposed that you're human.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we really all are, yeah. mm-hmm. which is the ironic part. And I think of maybe some things I said in high school that I could have get canceled mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. But it's like, wait, I've done so many other good things too. Yeah. Like I'm different now. Like yeah. humans change.
Yeah.
Evolution. Yeah. And in yeah. my dream world, we would start feedback education in first or second grade.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wouldn't right? that be
yes.
nice?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yes.
Because we get grades, right? And then that's like... Mm-hmm. our worth, right? There's mm-hmm. like maybe allowances or treats that are dependent on that. And college admittance. I mean, the narrative of like your whole life depends on what you get in biology your sophomore year of high school. Well, I hope that's not true. You know?
I remember what I got.
So, yes. Yeah, I just think like reframing these narratives and then learning how to give and receive quality feedback in a way that is loving and growth intended.
And I will say one more thing to this part. I think because we love to hang on to every word of praise and we just eat it up, we also hang on to every single word of criticism and take that just as personal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I do more. I mean, my student evaluations come in and the one negative comment I'll fixate on, even though it could be a whole class of like, right. I loved it. And
you're a goddess.
All I think about is like,
you're like, but that one student.
Not everyone's going to like you.
You're like that one kid said I was kind of disorganized. I know, but everyone like, else is just praising you to death.
Turns out I am real disorganized.
Yeah. Oh, that's so real.
So the next thing we kind of want to dig into is your expertise in organizational communication.
Yeah.
So in your experience and research, what are some of the repercussions when it comes to an organization's culture internally and then externally?
Yeah. Well, I mean, going back to this, I think organizations in general are crummy at giving feedback, right? Mm-hmm. We do these like annual reviews or like at my job, it's once a year when really it should be like
interesting.
Timely feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like right when you blow it, right? Like, like it should be like, okay, here's what happened. How are we going to make a plan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to compile like all of my activities of the year and then
yeah, it's like, them. So 235 days ago, this happened. Right. And it's like, yeah. Wait, what?
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
And I think we are again conditioned, right? We don't get called to the principal's office because we did something awesome. We get called to the principal's office when we're in trouble. And so having, you know, a dialogue with our managers, with our bosses, that's like, hey, here's where you're doing great. Here's where I'm seeing opportunities for growth, right? Reframing it in that way is a big thing. I think we often, I know when I've been a manager, I'm like, if I ignore it, this will go away. Mm-hmm. I sure hope so.
Yes.
And so, you know, because we're not trained in giving and receiving feedback, because it's uncomfortable to do, I think we often avoid it. And so I think if organizations could focus on that, one thing that the rafting industry does that's actually kind of cool is, you know, when you're on a multi-day trip, you have a meeting in the morning and a meeting in the afternoon where you debrief and you make your plan. And if it's a day trip, you get in a circle at the end of that trip and like, here's what you did great. Here's what you did great. We could tighten up in this way. And I often say in my work in the river community, why I love doing this work in the river community is this is a group of people that takes care of each other. The way that they watch each other on the river, the way that they rescue each other on the river, they take care of each other. And so if we could do that for each other emotionally as well, right? So be taking care of our growth in that way.
Yes.
And then if you see someone, you know, maybe in a situation interpersonally that doesn't feel good, are you throwing them the throw rope, which is the thing we throw each other if we're swimming unintentionally in the river. So.
And if you're like emotionally drowning, can you call out and be like, hey, I'm struggling, help. Totally. Can you help me here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Being able to vocalize like, okay, I need someone saving grace right now. I need the rope.
Yeah, exactly. And then some companies are doing some neat stuff. So, you know, all of this started at Grand Canyon National Park and the Park Service is doing some really cool stuff. So one thing is, if someone is behaving poorly on the raft trip, they will send a helicopter to come and get that person and tote them out of there, which I think is like,
wait, that's amazing.
So
that's
amazing. So
cool. Yeah.
Right. That you can just get like kicked out of the Grand Canyon. Exile Island. Being a brat or being creepy. A lot of companies are having folks sign code of conduct. Right. So I think, also just being explicit about what behavior is expected. I do think people are on vacation and a lot of people have a lot of different definitions of what vacation is, right? So some people are like, I go wild and I have a lot of alcohol and drugs and I wear as few clothes as possible. And some people have a really different idea of vacation. And so being explicit about like, here's how we behave. This is the vocabulary that we use. Here's how we treat our guides. Here's how we treat other customers. And if you don't adhere to that, then like, see you later, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's not perfectionism, right? But having clear expectations so that like we can meet them. Because I think that's another interesting thing is like, well, whose definition of perfectionism? Like, maybe I'm the perfect party monster, and that makes me think I'm the perfect party draft guide. But, like, that's not going to fly great with the bird watching trip.
Yeah.
You know, totally inappropriate. So perfection is actually this totally weird concept, because who's perfection?
Well, whose definition of it? And totally. We've talked about multiple times in other episodes the concept of people pleasing, right? And what it actually is. Dr. Nicole LaPera, she wrote a book about, you know, things like this. And she said, people pleasing is not actually trying to please people or make people happy or comfortable. It's trying to control other people's perception of you.
Oh, interesting.
And so that plays a lot into that, where it's like, okay, am I wanting to come off as this like party monster person? Yeah. Am I wanting to come off as this like really put together, polished person? And it's not dependent on what you value or what you appreciate. It's what everyone else is thinking and preserving that image.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to organizations, I would just say, like, are you explicitly talking about these things? Are you laying out these expectations? Are mm-hmm. you communicating? And that would be, I think that's what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think, like, having follow through with said expectations.
Yes. Right.
Which is huge, because I've heard in so many places, even if it's like, yeah, we are very inclusive of our LGBTQ community and we provide such and such services. We provide these mental health services, like blah, 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 blah. But then when people actually ask about it, or maybe they report something that did make them feel uncomfortable, there has to be that follow through and that execution, which is hard, because then the organization might come off as like, oh, but we don't want to be mean.
Right.
We don't want to be rude if we have to like reprimand someone or give someone feedback or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Another question I had for you, because you said you want to teach this like cycle of feedback and constructive criticism to kids or like in schools. How would you see that going? What's like a brief like course layout of what Maria would do to teach feedback?
I mean, I am a little biased because I am a communication professor, but I would start teaching communication stuff like early, and that would include conflict and reading body language. But it would also be like, are you doing peer evaluations and then giving that feedback? But you know, when you're a kid, there's squabbles about like sharing my toy or whatever. And so instead of, you know, the adult intervening and being like, child A, give child B that toy back, right? Having child A use statements like, hey, when you don't share that toy with me, it doesn't make me feel great. Or so like starting there so that we can clearly, so these kids can clearly, and I think that this is happening more and more as I watch my friends raise kids, and they have so much more interpersonal savvy than than I did. But yeah, I think also, I think we look at how grades work. I think we look at like when we give feedback, when adults are giving feedback. Like, I don't know, what if you had a meeting every night with your child that was like, what were the things you were proud of today? What are the things you could have improved on? You know, what would that be like? How would that feel different? What if you had a chat at the end of the day and was like, what didn't you do perfectly? How are you proud about it? You know, I don't think I was ever asked that as a kid.
That would have been huge as a kid.
Right?
Yeah. And shifting, like, what did you learn from that? It's like then the so what, instead of like, oh, okay, we don't have to talk about this. That feeling will go away. It's okay. It's like, no, that's awesome. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
What can we do differently about that?
Or like, hey, you screwed up, Maria. Yeah. What would you do different next time with your sister?
Yeah.
And I think this would benefit us greatly as well in romantic relationships, because then when you set this pattern and you understand like, okay, this is how I give feedback.
Yeah.
This is how I can take feedback. It's like that will bless you literally everywhere. And I did want to plug a quick resource. It's an Instagram page called Little Big Feelings, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a woman who has studied child development and etc. And I did see this one, I don't know if it was a bit or something, but she was teaching about when kids fight over a toy. And I was able to put it into practice, and it was crazy. So I manage a daycare at my gym, and these kids were fighting over a toy, and one of them took it from the other, and they started to fight. And instead of going over and be like, give it back and say sorry, it was like, okay, how are we feeling right now? You seem upset. You know, what are you feeling? What are you feeling? And they're like, angry, mad, I want that toy, like blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay. So what do you think we should do about it?
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they sat there and they looked at me and they're like, I don't, what are you, like, they literally had no clue. And I was like, what should we do? And I just looked at them and it forced them to think like, oh, how can we solve this together? Yeah. And so the kid who stole the toy was like, well, I guess I can give it back. And they just have to give it to me later. And I was like, that's a good idea, sharing. So I was like, okay, let's give it back. How does that make you feel? You know, yeah. having them work that whole thing out. I don't think I ever had to do that as a kid.
No. Yeah.
And then, going one step. So what did you learn from this? What mm-hmm. might you do different next time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
be the next place
and
you
like
go.
You taking that toy. Oh, look at how that look at how that kid feels now. How do you think they're feeling?
Yeah.
Do they look happy?
Yeah.
No. Oh, do they look sad? Yeah. And they were like, oh, they do look sad. Yeah. So it's like, how can we help? You know, anyway, cool. So cool.
Yeah.
That cool really to think cool. about.
Totally.
So when we talk about perfectionism, Alicia and I always in tandem talk about connectionism.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And while perfectionism is the belief that if you look perfect, act perfect, you know, you'll avoid these dark or normal human emotions that happen as we experience being a human, connectionism is the belief that, you know, these moments of awkwardness or of pain or mistake, they're actually moments for us to increase emotional intimacy between us and other people.
Love it.
And it's like that moment you just talked about, right? Where these little kids have this moment to be able to come closer to each other and to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But perfectionism would tell them, you know, to put on a face, to save their face. And so in your opinion, Rhea, if everyone in the world was a connectionist, which is our mission, we're trying to get everyone
there. I love this mission. I'm on board.
We want everyone to be a connectionist. Yes, perfect.
Tired.
How would that change some of the problems you've discovered? Yeah. And you can go, you know, this is a little on the spot. So like, feel free to think, and like, it can be high level, something specific, but just in your expertise, like how would that change things?
Yeah. Well, I think so often, right, harassment, assault isn't about anything but power, right? And so like, I think if we were connected, we would feel more power in our lives and we would feel more connected, and it would be like, oh, that's a human being I'm saying that to. That is like someone that maybe I have a little more affinity. I would like to think that that is what that end result would be, right?
Yeah.
That we would stop and think a little more about like, oh, that's a human with emotions and that will have an impact on them. So off the top of my head, that is the first, is maybe people would be a little more thoughtful. I also think it's interesting that... you know, one of my findings was like, once you were in the crowd, you were protected, right? The male RAF guide sort of described you as their little sister, or, you know, they're the cool girl or
one
the buddy,
of the guys,
one of the guys, right? And that was a strategy people use. Like, if I could just be one of the guys, I was, you would be taken care of. But then how they talked about customers, right, would be, and so you would hear them talking about other women, they and how they were describing what they would
said
want to
women.
Do with them or their bodies or whatever. And it was a really interesting thing because it's like, I'm a woman. I'm here.
People.
Should I be standing up for, like, I don't know what to do in this situation. And so I believe that once you're like in, we take care of each other in a different way. So I would hope that through connectionism.
So I love it.
Sorry,
I love it.
Connectionism. We would feel that need to protect more people, right?
Yeah.
That connection of like, you're one of us.
Yeah. And it sounds like the power struggle and power dynamics would shift entirely because people aren't objects to obtain power.
Right.
They play a different role completely. Yeah. It's like, how can this person help me like achieve said goals, whether it's a position of power, like within an organization or to get more money or blah, 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 blah. People aren't stepping stones that you can step on to use. It's like, how can they help me and how can I help them?
Yeah.
And there are probably better experts to bring in about this because it's not my expertise and I don't know, but like how much of sexual assault, how much of sexual harassment is just feeling unconnected, feeling lonely, looking for that. And again, I don't know, and I hope that that's not offensive to anyone. But like, you know, does that change if you are feeling loved in this world? Are you less like, I know that I'm a better version of myself when I'm feeling connected and loved.
Yeah.
And I'm less likely to be a turd to other people.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's like, is that unacceptable behavior a cry for attention and right. connection and belonging yeah. somewhere? Like, oh, I'm just trying to fit in. Right. Maybe this joke will land. Ooh, that yeah. wasn't, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes, it's from a religious leader, so I have adapted it because obviously this doesn't apply to everyone's belief system. His quote is, sin is the result of deep unmet needs, uh-huh. which obviously sin is objective to the person who hears that. And so I've adapted it to basically any unpleasant behavior uh-huh. is the result of deep unmet needs.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you just said, that's not to discredit any victims right. or someone who's no. been Absolutely. Affected at all, but it does help to color the picture a little bit more, where it's like, what, that person has a need they're trying to fill, and they're doing it in a way that hurts others or themselves or both.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make it okay.
That's right.
But connectionism focuses on that need, right? Yeah. That need. Rather than isolating yeah. and shaming, it's like, no, let's talk yeah. about it. Let's bring light to it.
Yeah. Let's have the tools to feel connected mm-hmm. in a really genuine way. That's yeah. going to feel nice.
Yeah, totally.
So for the final question, it might be a little vulnerable, yeah. but would you mind sharing some personal experiences of when perfectionism has hurt your career in some way or your path or your life yeah. in general?
Yeah. I can very distinctly remember not finishing my master's thesis and like continually not doing that work. And so I went and saw a therapist to be like, what's happening here? She helped me figure out that I was so worried that it wasn't going to be perfect, that mm-hmm. it wasn't going to be good, that I was going to write something crummy, and that maybe my life wasn't going to turn out cool. Like I want, like, mm-hmm. you know, I got my bachelor's degree and that opened some really cool doors and I had fun. And then the master's degree was sort of like, you go and get that. And it's like, well, what doors is this going to open? And then I was really, really scared of what doors that might not open.
It might or shut.
Might okay. open. Mm-hmm. And then I was really worried that the project might be not great. Mm-hmm. And we discovered together that like I wasn't writing because I was so worried that I wasn't going to write something perfect. And I still mm-hmm. find myself doing that. I often, if I'm, I will just freeze, right? The flight freeze
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
I will freeze and feel much more productive taking a nap or watching TV. So I would say how it impacts my life is that like I take no action. So I'm happy to say mm-hmm. I went to that therapist. I talked a lot and I finished that master's degree. And you know what? It's not that great. You can look it up online and it is mediocre at best. But good is done. Or done is good. And that is like a phrase like that I tell myself all of the time. And writing my dissertation to get my PhD, it was a similar, I came up against it again. And again, that project's not that great, but done is good. Yeah. And like, sometimes you just have to know. And I would say that my PhD dissertation, not impressive, but it gave me the skills to write this thing that I'm so proud of now. Mm-hmm. This book about rough guides and sexual harassment. I have the skill set to make that happen. I feel like I'm doing really nice things in the world with that. So this thing might not be perfect, but maybe we're never aiming for perfect, but this thing mm-hmm. might not be good, but the next thing might be a little better and the next mm-hmm. thing might be a little better. And like, so I would say that the way I think I've stopped myself from doing things because I think I'm not going to be good mm-hmm. enough at them. Yeah. And so that comes especially from writing. And I'll be honest, I think until I became a RAF guide, which I was 24 when I did that, I only did things I was good at.
Mm-hmm. So we can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like pretty good at school. I'm a pretty good singer. So I was always in choir.
I didn't know you were a singer in theater.
What? Oh, yeah. Totally a theater kid.
I did theater and choir.
I mean, there's a reason we've got along great, right?
Yeah. Wait, that's so cool.
That is
cool.
Yeah. And I'd never thought of myself as an athlete, you know, at all. And then, I don't know, the river called to me and I went and golly, I was bad at it. Like so terrible. And luckily I was broke. I didn't have the money to drive back to where I was from. So I had to stay and I was like, I guess I'll keep training because I'm here and I'll just keep doing this because I have nowhere else to go. And I realized that like being terrible at something is kind of awesome. And like, I still wouldn't say that I'm the greatest RAF guide in the world, but it's opened up so much fun in my life and introduced me to so many best friends. Mm-hmm. I play guitar really poorly, but there's nothing I love more than like sitting around a campfire and singing mm-hmm. loud and playing a G, C, and F chord.
Yeah, know? Totally. They never let you down.
The trifecta.
Yeah.
I have just embraced the things that I'm bad at, and if you give yourself permission to like be kind of crummy at it, it's super fun. I took up woodworking and I have some real wobbly tables at my house.
That's so awesome.
But I made them and it's cool. And yeah. I have 10 fingers still. So like that feels like a success. So
it's a victory.
I guess that would be the other thing is through guiding, I learned like you can be terrible at things and like no one is worried about it. Like you're the only person that's worried about it.
And yeah. Showing up imperfectly is better than not showing up at all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I'll give one more example. I'm not the fastest hiker or walker, but like this summer I made a goal of doing a pilgrimage. It's called the Camino de Santiago. And I walked from Portugal to Spain and I worked with these friends that are like
how
amazing athletes. It was around like 200 miles. It was totally great. I recommend it to everyone. But my friend that I walked with was like a hotshot wildland firefighter. So she has these long legs and she's like, and out of the first few days, I was so self-conscious. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to catch up with Nicole. And you know what? I never was. And it was fine. We figured out the places we were going to meet. And I would walk around and be a little slower. And Nicole went at her pace and it was fine. And like, I could have been self-conscious about it and been like, everyone's walking up this hill faster. But you know what? We all got to the cathedral at some point and we all were proud of each other and we all celebrated together. So again, like, just be out there doing it. It doesn't matter if you're doing it slow. And anyone I passed on the trail, I was like, get it, sister. You know, like I was cheering them on. I don't think anyone is ever like, ugh, that person's walking so.
Yeah, loser.
So I really don't think that I'm ever thinking that about anyone. But in my head, I'm assuming everyone's thinking that about me. Mm-hmm. So I'm really working on that narrative of just like, is it fun? We'll do it. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Perfectionism stopping you from doing anything right now in your life?
Ooh, interesting question. I mean, I would say that like my manuscript for this book is done and it's really scary to send it out. And like, mm-hmm. I can find myself finding excuses on like why I don't send it. And so, you know, I try to set a goal of like one a day, but absolutely the like rejections are a reason that I don't.
Yeah, no. Totally.
Yeah, that's hard. Yeah,
I like being told yes.
Same.
Me too. Yeah.
I love being told.
My favorite word. Speaking of your book, can we plug that really fast? Can you talk about like...
I mean, I'm still...
Because it's not out yet.
Publisher's looking for me. Yeah, I'm trying to sell it, but I've written this and I'm really excited about it and just trying to...
Good for you.
Find a home for it, so.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of when you said that, like, oh, I'm just nervous about putting it out there, was the people who reached out to you to share their story.
Yeah, right?
And the people who are like, oh, I love that she's talking about this.
Yeah.
And there's so many people that would love that and benefit from that.
Yeah.
And organizations that can make shifts and differences that will be crucial to creating a culture of connection.
Which would be so awesome, right?
So awesome.
More fun for more people.
Yes. That's what we're here for.
Yes, I love it.
Maria Blevins, president, 2024. Well,
I'm here for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would pass on that job too.
Yeah,
it'd be a rough
time. It'd be a rough time for sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining. Do you have any final thoughts or things that have popped into your head you want to share?
No, I'm just so honored to be here. And thanks y'all for getting this word out. It's so important. Like, just go out there and have fun. You don't have to be perfect. Just have fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great way to end it.
I love it. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to have fun.
That's
so good.
Yes.
I love it.
New life motto.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that is our episode today, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. We are just excited that you guys are here and we're excited that Maria was here and willing to share her expertise and all of the hours and years that have gone into, you know, this 1 hour episode of just high level concepts that you've developed. So
Maria, do you know how to close out the episode with us?
I think I do.
Okay, you know the popping thing we do?
Yes.
All right, Anna will start off with her name.
My name's Anna.
My name's Alicia.
My name's Maria.
And this is popping perfectionism. Pop. I love it.
That was cute.
Not perfect but fun.
No.
Not perfect but fun. You're the best, Maria. Thank you so much.
Thank you.